Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power, and that is really what we're going to be talking about today, but on a level that, well, I don't think is typical of everyday conversation. And what is that level? It is the near-death experience. And we've had a number of guests on the Donna Sebo Show through the years that have shared their very personal experiences. But this is the first time that we have a guest, Carolyn Matthews, who actually mentors people, works with people who have gone through the near-death experience, because she feels that there's something very important about this that needs to be recognized on what I'd describe an academic, a professional level, so that there is an understanding to the best capacity that she's able to produce how to help people when they go through this. Because sometimes people don't know what to do with this experience and understand that there's more to life than sometimes we're taught to believe. Carolyn, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Donna. It's a pleasure to be with you and our listeners today.
Well, I know I asked you before we came on the air, because you have a delightful accent, that where you were from, and you're from England, and you live in Nova Scotia. And I would like you to share with my audience why this became an interest for you, and why did you decide to take what I'd call an academic positioning with this?
This is a step-by-step life event for me, and I ended up taking my master's degree, which I received in 2009, and this was at the Atlantic University in Virginia, and the very last subject which I worked on was the near-death experience phenomenon and its survivors. And it was during my increasing understanding of their situation, as far as one can, because I'm not a near-death experiencer myself, that I was truly touched by their strong urge to know what their mission in life was. And, of course, many of them do, but near-death experiencers all say that they have come back into physical life to complete the missions which they promised to fulfill. And, as I said, many of them know what it is, but a great many don't. And this is my interest, to help them discover what their mission in life is, and I designed a course for them, which was quite successful, and it's the course that I am that I have put into my book, Mentoring the Near-Death Experience Survivor, hoping that this will get out into the world so that more and more near-death experiences can be helped.
Now, again, this is an instructional book, Mentoring the Near-Death Experience Survivor. And the subtitle on this book is Addressing the Need to Find the Mission in Life. And it wasn't your mission, it was the mission in life. Now, you have dealt with how many people to date?
Oh, I don't know. Quite honestly, I don't count up. I ran the course during my master's thesis. It was my project. And since then, I have, of course, mentored people on a one-to-one basis, as indeed I mentored the group that I had when I was doing my master's thesis work. But in just recently, I really have not been running the course myself, because I've been rather involved with marketing my book, getting that finished, you know, writing it and publishing it and so on. So I couldn't give you a definite number on that, I'm afraid.
I was intrigued by a statement you made right in the beginning of your book, and that is those people that have had the near-death experience really wanted to be aware of what your course was because they thought they might be able to utilize it off and on throughout their life. And I know that some of my listeners have had near-death experiences. When you were doing your research, when you were working on this course, what was the most profound story? Each and every one of them is very significant. I don't want to play down any of them. But what was the most significant story that comes to your mind that really had a very, very deep effect on you and caused you to really realize that this was something worth doing?
Are you thinking before I gave the course or after I gave the course?
Well, initially? Why don't we take an example both before and after?
Before I gave the course, quite honestly, my heart was touched. I have to say that it was a light bulb moment when I suddenly thought, oh, they do need to know. They really need to know what their mission is. And I am going to address that. I had no idea how I was going to do it, but I did. I think I had a lot of inner guidance or a higher guidance. And I cannot pick out a single near-death experience that was related to me which would stand above the others. They're all unique. And yet they all have some of the core elements in them, the recognized core elements. One of the results of participants taking the course, one participant also touched my heart greatly when she said in her, this would be the post-course feedback, she said, this course has changed my life, and I have waited 50 years to know what my mission is. And this is Carol Lynn Vengroff. She has now gone on to write her own book about what she experienced, her memories from her near-death experience. And it's a wonderful book. So I thought, well, you know, she wasn't the only one who had waited a long time to not only have the near-death experience validated and believed, but to actually know the mission and to be able to carry it out. Because in my book, I don't just present a course and say, here's a course. I, as part of that course, I also show people how they can manifest their chosen mission in their daily life or in the environment in which they live. So I don't just leave them hanging saying, now I know what the mission is, what shall I do with it, how do I implement it? The course does cover that.
When you were putting together your information for your book, Mentoring the Near-Death Experience Survivor, you brought up some fascinating statistics, and this had to be done in the 1990 period. And you said that approximately 1 in 11 people had had a near-death experience in the United States at that time. This was a national survey that was done. And it was interesting because when you did your research, there had been a poll done regarding near-death experiences in the 80s. And at that time, there was only 1 in 8 that were reporting a near-death experience. And I like to think it's because we're talking more about this. And I think sometimes people have had experiences, and you can correct me if you feel that I'm not perceiving something correctly, but I think many times they will have these experiences and not honestly know what they've gone through.
Perhaps, yes, that's quite true. One of my participants said that it took her a long time to realize that what she'd actually had was a near-death experience. And about the Gallup poll, I think it was 1982, Gallup did a poll in the U.S. to see how many people had had near-death experiences, and the response was 8 million. And then he had a publication in 1990. I don't think it was a poll. I think it was a publication, a book or something he'd written. And in that, he said occurrences of the near-death experience had risen by a large amount, a disproportionately large amount, that it wasn't clear whether people had come forward and said, yes, I've had one too, because they saw that everybody, you know, that other people were coming forward.
Right.
Or whether, in fact, Gallup was saying it was 22 million events of near-death experience as opposed to 22 million near-death experiences themselves. There is a difference because it's known that near-death experiences can have more than one near-death experience in their lifetimes. Some of them have two or three.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
those that had multiple experiences, Carolyn, were these illnesses? What was it that, can you think of a case where there was more than one experience? I don't think that that's all that common. Am I wrong?
Well, I started out with PMH Atwater, who says she's had three.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read, researched others and understand that, yes, it's not the norm, obviously, but quite a lot of experiences have had more than one near-death experience. I couldn't quote any others offhand, but I think, generally speaking, most of them only have one.
Mm-hmm.
But there are quite a lot that go on and have a second or even a third, depending on, I imagine it depends on their health. I don't know. I honestly haven't researched into why they would have more than one. I just thought, well, that's probably because of health issues.
Now, with your research, you talk about the difference in the near-death experiences between children and adults. What are some of the most significant differences that you find between children and adults?
The adults always say that they have to return to Earth because they have unfinished business. The children do not necessarily... are not necessarily charged with completing a mission. The children say they have a much more simplified experience. They don't go through all the things that adults seem to go through. For instance, they don't have a life review, which adults do have. They are always met with unconditional love, as indeed the adult near-death experiences are.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point they're told, well, it's time to go back now. You cannot stay here. It's not your time. And they do. But they aren't not usually sent back with a directive to complete their mission. Although the lady who waited, that I just mentioned previously, who waited 50 years to know her mission, she was a child. NDE, or a child near-death experiencer, that she must have been around, I never asked her, but she must have been around 12 to 13 when she had her experience,
mm-hmm.
somewhere in that region. But younger children don't. They aren't told that they have a mission to complete. They're just told that it's not time for them yet, you know, and they must go back again.
You cite a case, Dr. George Rodanius, and this really intrigued me. And, of course, he's written a book about this. It's called The Journey Home. It came out in 1996. But he had supposedly died, was in a cooler in a morgue for 3 days, and popped back in as the doctor began to do the autopsy on the corpse. Boy, oh, boy, that poor doctor must have really thought he was going to be having a near-death experience when that happened, when you find that the person that's been in a cooler for 3 days.
Well, I imagine it was a shock.
No kidding. I mean, this, it especially in the modern world, this was quite a profound story. What were his experiences like? Can you give us just a brief overview? Because that was 3 days that he was not in his body.
Yes. It was actually Philip Berman who wrote about Dr. Rodinea in his book. Philip Berman's book is called The Journey Home. And Dr. Rodinea had been definitely in a cooler, and he said what woke him up was the fact that an autopsy was being performed, and at that point he was zapped back into physical life. He said that he was actually quite ill from having, not only because of what had caused the near-death experience, but also from the effects of having been dead for 3 days. You know, nothing was, everything was flatlined, and I presume his body was typical color that a corpse would have. Mm-hmm. And he was actually hospitalized for 9 months before he was able to sort of feel that he was, able to carry on in the world again. And he, Rodinea, is not the only one. There have been other doctors who have come forward and said, yes, I've had a near-death experience. What was the most recent one? Is it Eben Alexander, or is that his name, or Alexander Eben? I always get my names mixed up. But he said he wouldn't have believed about anything about the near-death experience except that he himself underwent one.
Mm-hmm.
And his book has sold well, too. So I'm very interested myself to see that more doctors are having near-death experiences. But as I said in my book, in the Western world, the unexpected revival of a patient is often called the Lazarus syndrome. And if you go back to the Christian Bible, it talks about Lazarus having been dead for several days before he was raised from his, called from his tomb. But the Lazarus syndrome is really a sort of way of seeing the whole event as pathological, which it's a little bit more than that, you know, it really mm-hmm. is. I think that more and more the near-death experience is coming to the attention of mainstream medical interest. Other countries have been doing their own work in this. In the Netherlands, Dr. Pim van Lommel has written a book on his study of 10 hospitals in the Netherlands. And he is now an internationally known, person who talks about the near-death experience and what happens to the survivors. And in the UK, Dr. Penny Satori, she wrote a 5-year clinical study on the near-death experience and its survivors. So, and of course, in the States alone, there's been a lot of research done by medical doctors, a lot of medical research. So it's people are sort of sitting up and taking note that this is something that needs more attention than it's being given.
It is very much, to my mind, an awakening to an understanding that life has a very rich and a very deep purpose to it. And when these people do share their experiences, in many ways, for many, uplifting, even though they may not themselves have gone through it. But one of the sides that rarely is talked about is the side that someone, when they've gone through a near-death experience, where it has not been something beautiful, beautiful light, beautiful beings, it has shown them something else. And dependent on the psyche and the cultural background of a person, it really can challenge a lot of their belief system or scare them. And this was one of the motivations of your putting together your course, Mentoring the Near-Death Experience Survivor. And we don't hear a great deal about the negative side. In your experience in working with people through the years, what has been the most significant, and I'll use the word dramatic, experience that comes to your mind that's not so positive or was perceived as a not so positive by the person that went through it?
Only one of my course participants had a distressing near-death experience, or a DNDE, as I call it. And as I wasn't at that time researching, and still haven't really researched very much into the distressing near-death experience, I just found that this person needed a little longer to do the work, which we were doing throughout the course, which at that time was only a six-week course. It's now seven. But what can I answer to that? I think that some people who have distressing near-death experiences do not want to go back to that state. And so because of that, they do have a fear of death. But I think I've mentioned that in my book, that the distressing near-death experience is really almost a rite of passage, and it's what is sometimes called an incomplete near-death experience. That's not to say that all near-death experiences go through a distressing situation or a distressing experience before they reach their full near-death experience, but some of them are the ones that have, the people who have distressing near-death experiences are facing the negativity of the psyche. And I can't remember who it was, but I know in my book I mentioned that it is actually the first step that of the shaman to face, or would-be shaman, to face the negativity that appears in his own psyche, and to overcome that. It's the hero's journey. I think Jung explains it best, and he says it's the story of the hero. He is the one who conquers the dragon, and the dragon is the unpleasant part, and attains mastery of his conscious mind. And I would go with Jung on that one. I think so. It was Christopher Bach, I think you pronounce it Bach. It's B-A-C-H-E, or Bash, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And he hypothesized that the distressing near-death experience was actually an incomplete near-death experience, in which he said some of the deepest structures of the psyche are being met and experienced. And he noted that these kinds of psychological structures are universally distributed amongst persons. That is, in ordinary language, potentially we can all have them. Or to put
Absolutely.
It another way, these deep structures of the psyche are available to all of us. And Christopher Bash adds that they are a rather common feature of the mystic's journey. So that might perhaps comfort those who have had distressing near-death experiences to know that this is not the end of the story. And in actual fact, when you move beyond that, things will improve vastly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely true. You comment in your book also how almost every single person that had gone through a near-death experience felt that their brains had been rewired. They found that their thinking processes had changed, and they were very observant about the way that their mind was working. And when you consider that, perhaps before, they didn't give it 5 cents worth of attention. But after the experience, they are paying attention. And there are various people that have had downloads, that's how I'll describe it, downloads of information that have gone into their head. They come back with these downloads, and that's where your book can help someone figure out what to do with that downloaded information. I find it so very, very intriguing that throughout the world, these experiences in various cultures have typically been talked about. And in the Western thinking, it's as if we are having to understand, coming to an understanding, that the modality of perception need to be changed, and that researching and listening to the stories of the near-death experiences, children and adults alike, can really be a very significant change for people.
I agree entirely. I think you're absolutely right. Whilst I was guiding my course participants and other near-death experiences through my course on finding the mission in life, I learned a lot from them. They may think that they learned something through me, but I actually learned a lot from them too, and I honestly believe and feel that it's a privilege to work with these people. We can learn so much from them. Usually in the past, there's been a lot of denial about the near-death experience from people that the near-death experiencer talks to, even family members. And in some cases, there's been ridicule. And I don't think that they've been taken seriously by the medical system, although the medical research that's been done in the States so far is causing there to be a kind of review of how death is actually, how can you say it, not viewed, or but you know, the whole review about what death actually is. Whilst these people have been declared clinically dead, and their minds, once the mind is shut down, once the brain is shut down, I should say, and had no oxygen for over 10 minutes, there is supposed to be irreparable brain damage. But near-death experiencers who have flatlined for longer than 10 minutes, obviously some are like that for hours and others for days, they come back with a very full and detailed memory of what happened at the point of from clinical death and right up to the point of re-entry into the physical body. So, yes, I do think that there's a lot of interesting research still to be done in this area.
Well,
I think it's a very fascinating phenomenon, and it's one that we can all learn and benefit from. And in my mind, you know, because I've wondered to myself, why is it that not all people who come close to death have this recall of a near-death experience? In other words, they don't all have what we call a near-death experience, even though they've come close to death. So why have some had it and some haven't? And I think it's because some people, that is, the ones who have the proper near-death experience, have been given the opportunity to channel what they have learned and bring back some of that essence, and channel it through their life mission, whatever their purpose is in life, to be able to express through that some of the unconditional love and the other things which they have brought back with them that they've learned whilst they were in the near-death state.
Carolyn Matthews, your book is very interesting, and I liked one of the comments that one of your students said. She said, "The course was remarkable and delightfully free of fluff. I almost fell off my chair when just a couple of weeks in I was asked to come up with my mission statement, just like that. Pow, I loved it. This should be required learning for all who would transform humanity." Carolyn Matthews, you have a website, and it is ndemission.com. That's the abbreviation for near-death experience, ndemission.com. And your information will be there. Your book's title, Mentoring the Near-Death Experience Survivor, is, well, one that was very unique. And I thought, it's a different perspective, especially from someone that's not had the experience themselves, but is an observer and a researcher. And I think this is quite a significant publication. I want to thank you for being my guest today, and I wish you continued success with everything that you're doing.
Thank you very much. And I'd like to also mention that the book is available on Amazon.ca, which is the Canadian version of Amazon.com. I haven't yet got it onto the .com, but it is on the .ca.
All right, there we go. Amazon.ca. Mentoring the Near-Death Experience Survivor, go to the website, ndemission.com. Carolyn Matthews again, thank you very much for being my guest. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Thank you.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny. They will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I'm so delighted that you are able to join me and you're able to hear the stories of people that have done research and explore the unknown. It is absolutely delightful to be able to bring them to the airwaves so that you can yourself hear their own particular experiences and what they have gained and learned from being involved with this. If you'd like to call in and chat with me today, the telephone lines are now open. The number to call into is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. All I need from you is your first name or your initial. Of course, I always like to know what part of the country you are calling in from or another part of the world, whatever it may be. Again, 888-627-6008. Quickly, I want to mention that I am going to be traveling to California. I will be in Southern California on a business trip. I will be there from the 4th of February through the 9th, and I will be in the areas of Santa Barbara, Los Angeles, Glendale, and Burbank. So if you would like to interact with me, meet with me for a private session while I am in your part of the country, give me a call at my office because I am booking appointments, 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604. Or when my newsletter comes out, you'll be able to see the local numbers in the areas that I've mentioned that you can call. And I'm available in person as well as by telephone. I wanted to share some fun details with you. I love trivia periodically, and so many times there are rituals or traditional things in the way of superstitions, beliefs that are passed along by members of family, or maybe you come up with your own. But there's some very popular ones that have been very, very much in vogue for a long period of time. One of them, and there was a movie that was made about this, is throwing coins into a fountain. And years ago, there was a beautiful, beautiful musical, Three Coins in a Fountain, that was done in Rome. If you've never seen it, you really should see it, because it's very romantic. And it's something I'd say that's just right in keeping with the theme of the upcoming month of February. Three Coins in a Fountain. Well, the tradition is not new. And we've all been at restaurants or in malls or in parks where there are these fountains that have the flowing water, and we look into them, and lo and behold, here's all of this coinage that's sitting at the bottom of the fountain. And you wonder, why do people do it? Well, this goes back centuries. That's right. This was a popular tradition a long time ago. How did it start? Why did it start? Well, it goes so far back that they actually don't know the moment of recognition, but it is a belief that spirits live in the bottom of water wells. Now, they said it was if someone made a wish and tossed the money into the well, the spirits would be pleased and would grant the wish. Now, there's another story. That's a nice one. I like that one. Within Greek mythology, mortals would bury their dead with an obol, and it's a very tiny coin under the deceased's tongue. Now, in that time frame, the Greeks believed that the souls of the dead needed money in order to cross the river Styx, which served as the crossroads between the living and the dead. Now, if money was put in the mouth of the deceased individual, Charon, the greedy ferryman, would then send them across to a peaceful afterlife. If they didn't, they wouldn't be able to cross on the ferry. So there you have two different versions of the use of coinage. But I think when the movie Three Coins in a Fountain came out, that was something that was just magical, and I really think it picked up big time. And in Rome, people will toss their coins, there's particular fountains that they will turn around, just like the movie portrays, make a wish, and then toss the coin over their shoulder into the flowing waters of the fountain, so that they will be able to go back to Rome at some time in the future. And then the other popular tradition that has been around for years, and coming from an Italian background, salt was very, very important. Well, remember the saying, you're not worth your weight in salt? Salt was used as a payment. Salt was a commodity that wasn't readily available. Salt was something that was necessary for physical wellness, and it was a very, very luxurious item in anyone's household. Why? Because salt was one of the few things for centuries that could preserve food. It's like sugar. If you have something that is in salt, it's dehydrated, it is not going to go bad on you, and it'll get you through a bad winter if you have salted meat. And though we have a few belief systems today that would say, oh, we have too much salt, salt is a very valuable commodity. To the ancient Greeks, preserving food with it was very, very important. They were actually paid in salt. Now, interestingly enough, and this was a point of information that I did not know, it was called salarium, from which the word salary stemmed. So they got their salary in salt. They were very, very much of the mindset that salt could also protect them from evil spirits. But why throw it over your shoulder? Have you ever spilled salt on a table and the first thing you do, it's almost unconscious that you do it, pick up a little few grains, it goes over your shoulder. Among the Italians, it's very, very common. Well, they believed that when you spilled salt, it was a sign from your guardian spirit, your guardian angel, that there were evil, dark apparitions that were around you. Now, you don't want these demons or apparitions of negative energy on your shoulder. So, you throw your salt over your left shoulder because it seems like the bad guys like the left shoulder. The good angels, the good spirits, like the right shoulder. So, that's what their belief system was. They felt that if they threw a pinch of salt over their left shoulder, they were able to get rid of the bad guys. They were giving them a bribe. Here, take the salt. Leave me alone. And sometimes when people did it, they said, oh, this will get in their eyes, and it will destroy the evil one's vision forever. Whatever it is, I've known people to do it over both shoulders. They say, why take a chance? We're just going to take care of both of them. But there you go with a little bit of background on belief systems. And it is not good, it's not bad. But culturally, these things are carried forward for centuries. And those are two, tossing coins into a fountain and throwing salt over your shoulder, that are still very much alive and well in the modern day world. Donna Siebel here. If you'd like to chat with me today, 888-627-6008 is the number to call into, and I would be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. And all I need from you is your first name or your initial. Let me tell you what I perceive, and then after that, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. Tomorrow, my guest is going to be Julia Shopik. Julia has an absolutely fascinating story about her husband and how, because of his illness with a brain tumor, changed her life entirely. It gave her a whole new direction. And this man that was supposed to have died lived for another 13, I think almost 15 years because of what she learned about nutrition and what to do when you want to find out how to help the body heal. The story is a very, very profound one, and I know you'll enjoy it. And then on Friday, we're going to be talking about cue cards for life. Christina has put together some items that allow you to figure out what is best for you in your life and in what you will do and what cues you need, perhaps to shift out of whatever you're experiencing right at the moment. Donna Siebel here. We're going to take a break. When I come back, I want to share a recipe with you for a real simple spicy soup. Yes, we still have the cold temperatures, and there's nothing like a delicious bowl of soup with some crusty bread and a nice salad to really bring everything back into harmony if you're feeling chilled to the bone. I also have a story about a child named Lisa and a special mysterious happening to a woman that really made her think about how the universe works in unusual ways. So we're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
As a counselor, Donna Siebel is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, before I share the recipe with you, I wanted to share a bit of information. For those of you that always are feeling like you're struggling with your weight, this is something that when I read it, I was just intrigued with it. It has to do with the mind-body connection. And they said this is something that they've done some research about. Harvard University, in fact, was involved in this research. And they said, what you need to do is simply think about all the exercise you already do each day, like making a bed, climbing up and down the stairs, walking around your home or office. What are you doing? You know, what kind of stuff do you do? Up, down, up, down. What are you doing? Do you know what? They were working with some hotel mates. And they said they were talking about them, about the amount of work they did on the job. They said, now what we want you to do, we want you to see yourself moving. Visualize this, going from room to room, changing the bed, vacuuming, dusting, cleaning the bathrooms, all of this physical labor. And you know what happened? The women lost 2 pounds in 4 weeks without making any conscious changes to their diets or activity levels. Now think about that. They lost 2 pounds in a few weeks without making any conscious change to their diet or activity levels. They are theorizing. When you realize exactly how active you already are, subconsciously, you sneak in a little bit more exercise activity, and you actually eat better. You will just make these changes on a subconscious level. And that's amazing. They just found that this was the case. The mind-body connection has a significant impact. Really does have a significant impact. I can remember years ago, and this was the California mentality, and my mother had it very strongly, and that was because in California you always wanted to be thin, trim, slim, you know, you couldn't have any excess fat and all this kind of stuff. And it was to the extreme. And I was put on diets when I was as young as 5, which is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, this is the stupidest thing, because when children are growing, they naturally, believe it or not, kids naturally only eat what they want. They only eat what's there, and they only eat little amounts. They got little bodies. They understand this. But when you get into that dieting modality, it's very easy to get stuck into thinking you're not going to be able to have whatever you want. You're just not going to be permitted to have it. So then you go and you sneak stuff and you hide stuff. And I went through all that stuff when I was especially a teenager. It was just unbelievable. And, of course, I was rebelling in a way, too. But I can recall that I had put on, let's say like 20 pounds of extra weight. And it was after I had my daughter, and I was desperate, and I went to a diet doctor. I was put on 600 calories a day. I was given injections. Oh, yes. Can any of you relate to some of this? I did this, and I really could not afford to do this. I was not in a financial position where I could afford to do it. I didn't lose 1 pound. I couldn't understand it. Well, what it was is my body, I know this now, but I didn't know it when I was in my 20s, my body was determined it was going to survive, and it was not going to give up anything, not a thing. Interestingly enough, it was about 2-3 years later, after this particular cycle I went through, that I had something shift in my life. I had just this wonderful experience of I'm going to accept who I am. I lost 30 pounds in 6 months. It's amazing what happens. And a lot of it starts up in that space, in that gray matter that Hercule Poirot often describes. You've got to feed those little gray cells. What's your image of yourself? How do you feel about yourself? Take care of yourself. So I just thought I would share that with you because of this visualization tip. Okay, this sausage kale bean soup. And this is something you can adapt with different meats, dependent on your taste, what you like. But this recipe calls for a pound of spicy Italian pork sausage meat, and this needs to be taken out of its casings. And you're going to need a half of a medium onion, and you want to chop it fine, medium, coarse, however you like it. And I know we've got a caller, so I'm going to do this quickly. 3 garlic cloves, you want to chop that. 1 32-ounce of chicken broth, or your favorite broth, 2 cups of heavy cream. 1 14-ounce can of cannelli beans, you want to rinse them and drain them. 2 sweet potatoes peeled and cubed. 1 bunch of kale, coarsely chopped or torn. And those are the basics. Use a Dutch oven. Cook your sausage, onion, and garlic for 5 minutes or until the onion is softened and sausage is brown. You can take out the fat drippings if you want. Otherwise, you can leave them in for flavor. Add your broth, your cream, your beans and sweet potatoes. Cover the pot. Bring it to a boil. Let it simmer for 15 minutes. Stir in your kale. Let it cook for 5 minutes. Voila! You have got a wonderful, hearty winter soup. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be going to our caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Are you speaking to me?
Yes, I am, dear. What's your first name or initial?
It's Linda.
All right, Linda. And where are you calling in from?
Well, Northern California. And we actually spoke the other day, and I just had a question from something that you had said and wondered if I could ask that.
Certainly. Go right ahead. I don't remember what I said, but go ahead and ask the question.
Okay. Well, I had mentioned that I might be going to do a meditation retreat.
Linda? Uh-oh. She dropped off.
Uh-oh.
Okay. Linda, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, hon. If you're on a cell phone, you dropped away. So you just need to, ask the question. Because you totally were offline there for a minute.
Okay. Can you hear me all right now?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. So I'm just, you mentioned that if I did that it was, I didn't quite catch it, that maybe it was like a little oppressive and it would only be short time. And I'm just wondering, maybe I wouldn't want to do it at all and just make a move maybe to Southern California or to Arizona.
Okay, first, I don't remember what I said. I have no recall. When I do readings for people, I let go of the information.
Right.
So why don't you reframe your question quickly for me? And we only have about a minute.
Okay. Would it be best for me to not do the work exchange program at the meditation center?
Yes.
For me not to do it?
Yes.
And would a move down to either Palm Springs or Arizona be best?
I think what you need to do is evaluate. You need to be able to make a trip to each area to see where you want to fit in that environment, if it really is going to be what you want. I think a move is going to happen, but I don't know that it's going to happen right away. So do your homework.
Okay. Thank you.
And I want to thank you for your call, dear. I'm out of time.
Yes, thank you so much, Donna.
Oh, you're very welcome, Linda. I'm delighted you called back. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Life is a journey, and I don't know of any shortcuts. But I do know that every day that you live is a gift. And you have that gift yourself, and you have your own light within yourself that you can beam out onto everyone that you cross paths with. You're unique, you're special, and just like my guest said, you do have a mission in this life. Sometimes the journey is discovering what that mission is, but more importantly, live your life with appreciation for it, love yourself, and have an absolutely magnificent day. This is Donna Sebo. I'll be back with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Won't you join me? I look forward to sharing time with you again. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.